From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on college campuses across the country with students arriving for the fall academic campaign. And in some ways, it's a different feeling than it was a year ago. The biggest change is the widespread availability of COVID vaccines. But as the Washington Post notes, administrators had hoped to be well beyond the pandemic by now. And that's not the case. From the Post, quote, "A year ago, there was chaos in various places as viral outbreaks forced major universities to empty classrooms and, in some cases, residence halls on short notice. Many students stayed home for much or all of the year. Schools struggled to find the right ways to teach under unprecedented public health restrictions, face-to-face, online, or some combination. They also faced enormous expense and logistical challenges in testing students and employees for the virus," end quote. Just 2 months ago, it might have seemed that COVID was largely contained. But now, with some states seeing their highest daily rates of death and hospitalization due to COVID, especially in the American South, schools have to decide just how much to allow and how much to restrict. Again from the Washington Post, quote, "Vaccinated or not, here they come. College students are flocking to campuses across the country for a school year they hope will mark a full return to the academic and social life so often denied them for the past year and a half due to the pandemic. Yet the Delta variant's summer surge, driving viral infections and COVID-19 hospitalizations higher from coast to coast, now looms as a dangerous threat over what many had thought would be a celebratory moment for higher education. It raises the stakes in the divide between schools that mandate vaccination against this virus and those that do not. And it has inflamed debate over whether and how long students and professors must wear masks indoors," end quote. The Charlotte Observer in North Carolina reported on the wide range of vaccination rates on college campuses in that state. Take a look at this. UNC Chapel Hill, 90% students vaccinated. At NC State, 68% students vaccinated. 67% of campus staff are vaccinated. Only 46% of East Carolina University students on campus are vaccinated, along with 76% of employees there. Those numbers are nowhere near high enough to offer a kind of campus herd immunity in those communities. At Appalachian State, the vaccination rate's 51%. The New York Times reports that for New York State parents sending their kids to school here in state, it's a very different atmosphere. Quote, "New York's universities were among some of the first institutions in the nation to issue vaccination mandates, some as far back as the spring, long before city agencies or many private companies did so, and before the rise of the more contagious Delta variant. At the time, it was unclear how the general public would respond to such orders. Well, now, as many colleges across the state begin classes this week in the midst of an uptick in cases, in part because of Delta, schools have noticed a surprising trend: compliance. Few of the controversies and protests that have sprung up across the country in response to vaccine mandates in the workplace have been seen on New York's college campuses," end quote. This hour, back to campus, pandemic or not. I'll welcome our guest now, the president of Nazareth College's Beth Paul, who's with us in studio. And it's really nice to see you in person. Thank you for being here.
It is a delight to be here in person. Thank you.
Thank you. Heidi McPherson is president of SUNY Brockport. President McPherson, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And Andrea Wade is provost and vice president of academic services at MCC. Andrea, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, let me just ask all three of you for sort of a little snapshot on what's happening on your campus. Does it feel something close to 2019, or does it feel very different than 2020? And what is enrollment like? I'll start with President Paul.
It has been an incredible week on campus. We started classes on Monday, so we're about a full week in. Our newest students moved in about 10 days ago. We are 99% vaccinated, and that is among students, faculty, and staff. 99%. We have everyone wearing masks indoors, and it feels joyous to be together, honestly. We're seeing higher than usual rates of participation in the kinds of events that we're offering. I'm hearing faculty, staff, students comment about how wonderful it is to be in person. And I think one of the lessons for us is, you know, students are taking it in stride that they have to wear masks right now. Yep, they have to wear masks right now. And when we have to, we will, to be able to protect ourselves, to protect our community. So it's been a great week.
How did you get to 99% vaccinated?
A variety of things. I think, first of all, our values. Our values, you know, we very much are a community that cares about each other and takes that responsibility very seriously. We also did a fair number of education events over the summer. So engaging students who had questions and who were seeing media about various myths, you know, we engaged them in critical dialogue about those myths and gave them education from scientific perspectives. And it helped. Over the summer, the rates climbed.
Is there a mandate on your campus for
Yes.
vaccines?
Yeah. We have a responsibility, a mandate for all of our residents and everyone in our community. So students, faculty, staff.
How much pushback have you gotten?
A little bit. You know, to be blunt, you know, most of the pushback has been from people who have nothing to do with Nazareth College. So there certainly are people out there who are taking this on as a cause, and I got a lot of communication from them. We've had some internally, and mostly it's concerns and questions. And so the education approach that we've used has been very helpful. Over time, it has helped people get the information they need to make the best decision.
President Paul, do you find yourself remaining diplomatic when you get correspondence from people who have nothing to do with your college? Or do you respond, look, you don't go to school here. You don't have a kid in school here. You don't work here. I'm not really sure what's going on.
We just put our information out there and stick to our values. Our values are working really well for us, and it's what our community needs to be about.
More complaints from students or their parents on the vaccine mandate?
Mostly concerns from parents, but some from students as well who, again, have questions
yeah.
that they need answered.
Okay. President Heidi McPherson of SUNY Brockport, paint the picture on your campus.
I think the overwhelming word I would say about this week is joy. There has been the opportunity for people to see each other for the first time in a long time. There is energy on campus. The campus mall, as we call it, is full as classes change over. People are talking and laughing and being outside together. There is a sense of community that has been restored to our campus, and we are very excited that our students are back and they're doing so well. It is a great time to be at Brockport. It's a great time to be at college, and I think that our students are really well prepared to be face-to-face because they have had that period of time, 18 months, where if they were a high school student, they've had a different experience. If they're coming back to us, they've had a different experience. So there is a lot of joy to be had here.
Okay, on vaccination, talk to me about your decisions on mandates and compliance.
So we're part of the SUNY system, as you know,
yep.
and we are working with SUNY. SUNY does have a vaccination mandate. So by the 27th of September, our students need to be vaccinated or they need to have the medical or religious exemption process complete by that point. Already, we are at 87% of our students being vaccinated or either fully vaccinated or almost all the way through the process. So we're pretty excited about that. We're offering opportunities to make sure students know how to get the vaccine if they've come from another part of the state. And we are pretty confident that we're going to get to where we need to be.
SUNY Chancellor Jim Mylotras told the New York Times recently, students just want to be back. The enthusiasm and energy is actually palpable on campuses. I sensed it in a way I've never sensed it before, end quote. Do you agree with that, Heidi?
100%. Absolutely. The students will do what they can to, as we call it, protect the nest. We are the golden eagles, after all. And they want to be here. They know what they need to do to be here, and they're certainly doing it, which
okay.
is great.
And with that deadline coming up for vaccination, you said you think you're going to get to where you need to go. Have you had much pushback?
We've certainly had good conversations. We have had some people who are concerned about the mandate. What I will say is, of course, if you're a fully remote student who never sets foot on campus, you don't need to be vaccinated. But the vast majority of our students do want to have that face-to-face opportunity. Certainly our undergraduate students do, and they will need to be vaccinated. So we have an education campaign. We've done social media on this. We make sure that in our testing, which we do with our students, all students as they come back in, we talk with them about the vaccine mandate, why we're doing it, and the need for public health.
Just about every industry in the country that is setting vaccine mandates is dealing with, admittedly pretty rare, but occasional, not just obstinance, but some employees leaving their jobs. We've seen it in everything from educational staffing to sports commentating. Have you lost any staff, President McPherson?
Not as a result of the COVID vaccine mandate, but we certainly do know that people are sometimes having to move for work and doing various different things. We know that some people don't want to come back and work face-to-face, and so there are some people who've left us, but our overall staff turnover rate is no more significant. In fact, it's much lower than it's been in previous years.
Yeah,
so that hasn't been significant.
Interesting. Can I ask President Paul, have you lost any staff over this?
Not over the vaccination requirement. We've had some that have been concerned, as Heidi was saying, you know, about being back in a totally in-person environment. But again, over time, that has subsided. And, you know, people are feeling more comfortable. Once we're starting to have the experience, people are feeling more comfortable.
And President McPherson, before I turn to the story at MCC, what about mask mandates and indoors, et cetera?
Sure. So at the moment, we have, because of the Monroe County statistics that we're aware of, we have reinstituted the mask mandate for all. We hope at some point to be able to lift that mask mandate for vaccinated individuals. But at the moment, we are having a full full mask mandate. We did, however, make sure that we tested all incoming students, whether they were vaccinated or unvaccinated, as they came back, kind of just to make sure we had the basic line number, but also to ensure that we could help our community feel safe. And we had a fantastic result of only 0.05% positivity rate. So 0.05% positivity rate is unreal in the number of students that we actually tested. So we feel pretty confident we're doing everything we can.
Yeah. When you say, President McPherson, when you talk about, you know, instituting the mask mandate for now based on the conditions,
mm-hmm.
My observation on this subject that is so charged, it has become pretty emotional in a lot of places, is that I do think people want and deserve off ramps. I think they, you know, nobody wants to mask forever. I certainly don't. But President Paul and I were both wearing our KN95s. We walked in to the studio here. It's part of the deal right now. I think it's important that you do give people some sense that, hey, if we meet a certain threshold, either of infection in the community, hospitalization in the community, campus vaccination, whatever the metrics are, that we don't do this forever and that we stay data focused. We had one of the best studies we've ever seen out of Bangladesh this week. And if listeners haven't seen it, you really ought to look it up. You have not seen anything quite as scientifically robust as what they were able to do there. And what they found in Bangladesh was that surgical masks, KN95 and N95s, absolutely work a significant impact on protecting hospitalization and death among adults. This was not tested in kids and was not tested in schools. It was among adults, particularly older adults. You're protecting older adults in a big way with surgical masks. Cloth masks, kind of a negligible effect, not that helpful. A little bit, but way down the list. And so I think the better data we get and the better metrics we get, the more we can plan to deal with when infections and hospitalizations are up and to make a shift when things start to change. And I'm curious to know if you feel like your campus, President McPherson, at least appreciates the sense that we're doing this now because we have to. Nobody thinks it's permanent or forever.
We have an excellent emergency operations center that has been working since we stood it up 18 months ago. We have COVID alert levels that we have metrics against. Currently, we're at the blue level, which is an intermediate alert that is related to the fact that in Monroe County, those infection rates are up. But on our campus, the numbers are so low, we are really excited about that. We hope to go back to the green level soon. This is something we look at every single week. If we have to go higher, we will, but we use data all the time in the work that we do. And as we know more and more information, as science gives us further details, we take that into account in every way in which we protect our campus.
I have such good cheeky cloth masks, not the KN95, and now I'm just going to have to ditch those for the moment. And that's okay. We all have to make sacrifices and we all adapt to new information. Andrea Wade, over at MCC, can you paint the picture there?
Well, I think we started our classes last week and students are telling us that they are so excited to be returning for the fall semester. They are coming eager to learn, eager to reconnect with their peers and with their professors, and to look at, in some cases, some changes actually in the areas of study that they're connecting with. The pandemic having highlighted some opportunities for study that perhaps they wouldn't have considered in the past.
Okay. And give me a sense for, you know, how typical this feels like a September at MCC, you know, vis-a-vis 2020 and what you've, you know, what the campus has had to deal with in the last 18 months?
Well, certainly it's different. And like the other institutions, we're very, very much committed to safely and compassionately returning to in-person learning and work. So we have the masking and the testing and the vaccinations, but we're also looking at continuing to have a sense of normal. For example, last evening our students had an outdoor kickball tournament and a movie night on our Brighton campus, so that we're really trying to go back to the kind of things that they so appreciated about an on-campus and in-person experience.
Okay, and any pushback to any of the mitigation measures, and what's the feeling about vaccination, et cetera?
Well, again, as a SUNY institution, for our students who are on campus, that is a mandate that we've begun implementation, and there's a period where we're collecting that information and giving students the opportunity to apply for exemptions. But also a little bit different, we have a little bit different student mix where we have a significant number of working adults and student parents. So we've always had alternatives for online learning. Even before the pandemic, nearly 70% of MCC students took an online course. So for students who are not ready to return to a campus experience, they have these other alternatives and they can choose online or remote learning and still be able to engage and move forward with their educational program.
Andrea, as I mentioned, Chancellor Molotris said that enrollment is spiking. Interest is spiking, and there not only is a surge of people back on campus, but applications and enrollment is up for many institutions. How has it been for you?
Well, certainly we're looking. It's looking favorable. It's too soon for us to report on particular specific fall enrollment. What we're really prepared for is to serve about 10,000 students across our campuses and sites this fall. We are still enrolling late start courses, and we won't have our official enrollment numbers until November. But you're correct that we are seeing some interest in returning to campus and returning to learning, and we're very excited to be able to serve our community.
President McPherson, what about enrollment, application, et cetera?
So our numbers are a little down this year, and that's in part because our numbers did dip last year during the pandemic. We haven't been able to get some of those students back who chose to leave us, but we are doing a great deal of active recruiting for 2022, and we're looking to see those numbers increase again.
Okay. And President Paul at Nazareth College?
We definitely have an increase from last year in our first-time in college students, as well as our returning students. We're really pleased to see a very good, robust returning number. It really speaks to the interest students have in being in person.
Tied to this was the question early in the pandemic of whether higher ed could be broken by an ongoing pandemic in terms of enrollment, funding, et cetera. Has that storm largely passed, or is it still tight? Is it difficult? Is it a challenge at Nazareth?
You know, that's a very interesting question. There are all sorts of perceptions of the value of higher education and movements in various ways to advocate for various changes. I think we've learned a lot in the last year and a half about the value of higher education in our society and about the value of different kinds of experiences in higher education. It's certainly true, and you have this represented on this show today, which I think is really wonderful, a wonderful strength of that diversity across the Rochester community. You know, there are different kinds of educational experiences for different kinds of people. What we know at Nazareth is that the in-person experience and the very highly experiential, learning that we offer, we have a lot of partnerships all throughout the community where students learn in person in real experiential, opportunities. We know that that's really effective.
What about President McPherson? How do you feel about the concern, especially that was much more acute last year, just about staying afloat financially and making sure that safety was first, but also that institutions could continue to do what they're doing?
It's obviously something that we didn't budget for 2 years ago. Mm. We didn't say, oh, we're going to have to do 4,000 COVID tests every week to go forward. So there's a lot of things that we have been able to achieve over the last year, which we didn't expect to be able to achieve. We're very grateful for both the state and the federal support that has allowed us to make sure that we can react to the additional costs and things that we need to look at. It does mean that we need to look at everything that we do on our campus. It does mean we always have to be fiscally responsible, but that's always been the job. So it's important that we look at what are the numbers of students coming in? How do we best serve them? Do we have the right programs for them? Do we give them opportunities to learn in different ways? Our undergraduate students are primarily face-to-face, and that's what they're looking for. But our graduate programs have been primarily online for several years. There are continue to be opportunities for us to explore new ways to support those students, ensuring that they're fully engaged in their classes, that they have the opportunity to be ready for their professional world, and that we can do things to give them the credentials. So I would say, yeah, there's a lot to think about, but that's always been the case for higher education.
Okay. Andrea Wade, you want to weigh in on that too?
Sure. I would say for MCC, in addition to our commitment as an institution that prepares students for transfer, we are absolutely engaged, I think, in helping define the future of workforce and post-pandemic careers. So we're working very closely with employers in our region to identify skill gaps and to create the support and the programming to help our students connect with those opportunities. So I think we are resilient and we're agile, and the fact that we have such rich higher education in our community is a strength for helping our community move beyond this.
Well, I'm thinking about how different the question on testing has been in the last 18 months. Because, you know, President McPherson was talking about 4,000 tests and all the expenses that go with that. A year ago, we didn't have vaccines yet. There were questions about how often do you test? You know, what testing requirements are there for students and staff? Now, adults can get vaccinated. And early in the vaccination process, before Delta was more prominent, what health leaders were telling us was, you know, if you are vaccinated, don't get tested unless you really have significant symptoms. Because, breakthrough infections happen, but, you know, vaccination is the protection. And that was sort of that. Well, now it is much more transmissible. We still transmit a whole lot less if we're vaccinated and for a shorter window of time. But there's, you know, it's just much more spreadable throughout every community. And then the question becomes, you know, what do you do in the case of a significant number of positive incidences? So let me ask all three of you, how are you approaching mitigation of, I mean, I don't know if outbreak is the right word, but if you get a cluster of infections, how do you know absent symptoms? Are you testing at all? Or what are you recommending? Can you take me through that, President Paul?
We certainly are testing, and certainly we are encouraging our full community, the minute you have any sort of symptom, to come forward for testing. We are doing regular surveillance testing of our unvaccinated students and faculty and staff. So every week, our unvaccinated, those who have approved exemptions, it's a very small, sure, you know, set of people, they are getting tested weekly. Our athletes are being tested 3 times a week. And everyone who is in an experiential setting, so in the community, whether they're at a hospital or a community agency, they follow whatever protocol is required by the agency. And so that often means weekly testing for those students as well. So that's the major approach that we're taking right now. We also have a very carefully defined isolation and quarantine protocol. So the minute that a student is tested and shows symptoms and is tested, maybe awaiting results of that test, but certainly once they test positive, they are isolated from others on campus, either on campus, so there is a separate building, entirely separate, that is preserved for isolation. Mm-hmm. And also anyone with whom they've been in contact is put in quarantine. So that also is a separate facility. So we're very careful about that. I would say, you know, last year, our fast, you know, response in terms of isolation and quarantine was probably one of the main factors of our success last year.
And when you say success, no significant disruption, shutdown, outbreak, et cetera?
Thankfully, no. We had a phenomenal year last year. We had two, kind of small spikes One in the fall, one in the spring, but we came right back down. And again, I really think it was because of our, very quick response in terms of isolation and quarantine.
President McPherson, how do you feel about testing this time around, and what's the plan?
Absolutely. So SUNY recommends that vaccinated individuals are tested once a month, and that's what we're doing. We're also, of course, testing unvaccinated individuals each week, either unvaccinated or haven't given us their vaccination information. They are tested every single week. We use SUNY Upstate Medical pool testing for this process. That turned out to be very successful for us over the last year. We're continuing to partner with our SUNY school on that process. We have quarantine and isolation space on campus, a whole residence hall that is set aside for that, for on-campus students. Off-campus students would have to isolate or quarantine in their own locations back where they are. But we are certainly doing that surveillance testing over and over again. If a student is symptomatic, we will also test them as well to make sure that they are tested separately and not part of the pool testing. We take antigen tests and PCR tests for them so that we can be sure they are healthy. If they're not healthy, that we get them the help that they need for that.
Okay.
So that's all part of what we're trying to do to keep everyone safe.
Okay. And Andrea Wade at MCC?
Yes, we as well are offering pooled testing on our campus, focusing on our unvaccinated population. And I'm sure this is true for the other institutions, but I wanted to bring up the fact that we are in very close contact with the Monroe County Department of Public Health, as well as being advised by SUNY and following what's coming out from the CDC. So we recognize that our plan is a living document, and we will continue to respond and evolve when there are changes in these guidance.
I've got one more question for our panelists, and then after our only break of the hour, we're going to turn it over to listener questions and comments on this as we talk about back to campus. In the midst of, we're still in the midst of this pandemic, maybe more in the throes of it than we thought we would be a couple of months ago. And the New York Times wrote about what works in convincing a remaining percentage of people to get vaccinated. I think our guests are really giving us that answer, and it dovetails exactly with what the Times wrote. They wrote, quote, "Vaccine incentives have largely failed in states across the country. Cash payouts, free beer, even lottery tickets have not done much to move large numbers of unvaccinated people to change their minds. What has worked is mandates for work, for travel, for going to school. More than 100 New York colleges have a mandate in place, according to a tracker from the Chronicle of Higher Education. Many of these universities said that more than 80% of their student body were partially or fully vaccinated as of mid-August. In many cases, the rate is higher than the general vaccination rate for college-age people in the state. In New York, about 64% of people between the ages of 16 to 25 have received at least one dose of the vaccine, according to state statistics. And college mandates are helping drive that number," end quote. President Paul, do you agree with that, generally speaking, that there's been a lot of different efforts to try to pull these numbers forward, but we're looking at what works? It's just telling people, okay, make the choice, but if you make this choice, you may not be able to do certain things.
I would add to that education. I think a big part of our success has been in one-on-one careful listening to students and faculty and staff that may have a concern or may have a question or may have a belief that they want to explore, and getting them the education that they need to learn about their concern and work through it. And we've spent hours and hours with that one-on-one kind of learning approach. And through that, people have learned what they need to learn to be able to make the best choice for themselves, for their families, for their community. So I would say education is a major tool for us.
President McPherson, what do you think?
I would agree with that. We are all institutions of higher education, and that is our role, our mission, and our remit to do so. Mandates do work, and I think it also helps that the FDA has finally approved fully the vaccine. I think we're going to see upticks as well as a result of that. So I think all of those things together are really important to make sure that we've got a higher and higher level of the vaccinated population.
And Vice President Wade at MCC?
I think one other thing I could add is that we offer choices to students where we can safely within the constraints of the mandates. So again, if there are opportunities for students to learn remotely or online right now because that's what they're comfortable with, then we offer that opportunity where we can. And what we found is some students, just knowing that they have choices, they may actually choose to vaccinate. It's the idea that it is a choice.
We're talking about back to campus and the challenge, but also the opportunity in front of these institutions as they welcome students and staff back. They get academic learning started again, sports back, and they're talking about campus life while we are still dealing with pretty high infection rates and dealing with a Delta variant that has, it's been a problem for, especially for the American South, but we don't ignore the challenge here. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we've got feedback from listeners here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, this summer we have talked to teachers for weeks now about what they have learned about teaching from this pandemic. What have they learned about interpersonal communication and building relationships with students? We close our summer series of conversations with teachers with a group of teachers who say that this has been particularly difficult for them. Music teachers. When the music stopped, things were very different. We'll talk about that next hour.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jennifer emails to say, campuses should be open, students should be back, but they should not be playing sports. Not yet. All right. So, President Paul, let me start with you at Nazareth. Sports back. What do you think?
It has been an incredible piece of our transition and our experience. We have taken our athletic competitions so very, very seriously. And I'm glad Andrea mentioned the partnership with Monroe County Public Health, because that has been a very close and important partnership. What we have found, and this is also, you know, in conversation with Monroe County Public Health, is that there has not been transmission through athletic activity. Nonetheless, we have put in all sorts of extra controls into the experience of athletics. So, as I mentioned earlier, our athletes are tested 3 times a week. There is a masking protocol. There is a very specific protocol in terms of travel. And this is something we've worked on, you know, with all of our athletic partners. And I have to say, these students are so motivated to have the full student athlete experience that the compliance has been extraordinary.
And can I just add, before I turn to our other guests on this question, for Jennifer and for others, I'm not indifferent to the concerns about COVID spread and where that could happen. What I have seen pretty consistently is people who are not involved in community athletics, whether it's youth sports, and I have a bias here. I've got a 9-year-old and I coach, so I have a bias. Now, it's outdoor sports, but I see what it has done for the kids who didn't get this experience last year when 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds who play soccer together or baseball together all of a sudden don't and can't. They understand why, and, you know, they're okay. They're not abusing them, but there is a value beyond just letting them go do something for 90 minutes. There's community building. There's skills and socialization. There's so much that comes out of athletics at the youth level. That's my bias. At the collegiate level, can you explain to someone like Jennifer or others who might be thinking, hey, this sports are just not that important. You shouldn't be doing it.
Oh, I think you're spot on. And I would add well-being, you know, for physical as well as psychological well-being. It's a major component of many of our students' experiences. And we also thought a lot about the what if we didn't have athletics and what kinds of risk factors would we be building in our community if we didn't? That was a serious concern for us. You know, as we were making the decision to move forward with athletics last year, we basically did an entire year worth of athletics in 2 months in the spring term last spring, and got through it with no issue. I mean, you know, we had a very, very successful experience, and our students told us over and over and over again, it's what allowed them to hold on. It was so important for them in terms of their mental health and their engagement in their collegiate experience. It's what helped them to hold on through the year.
I think the cynics think it's about just about money.
No, not at all. For us, we're a Division III school. It is about the complete learning experience, and it is very, very powerful.
President McPherson, what do you think?
I would agree 100%. We are a Division III school as well. That means we don't have athletic scholarships. Our students are playing for the love of the game. They're playing because they have a sense of belonging and teamwork. We made some hard, hard decisions last year. We didn't have fall sports. We didn't have winter sports. We didn't want to take the risk at that point when vaccines were not widely available, when people couldn't get what they needed to get. Now that vaccines are widely available, we started in past spring where we had outdoor sports, and we checked, is this pilot going to work? Can we make sure we keep our students safe? And indeed we did. Again, as President Paul found, it wasn't through sporting activities that we were finding any kind of transmission. We use data, we use our metrics, and we use all the ways in which we can keep people safe. We follow NCAA guidance for testing. We make sure we have good protocols for travel. We've limited some of the travel that we do, but the opportunities that our students have to be part of a team is so very important for their sense of well-being, their sense of belonging, their sense of pride, and in fact, it has a big and wonderful impact on their overall GPA. Our athletes have generally a higher GPA than many of the rest of our student body, and that's because they work together, they know how to do time management, and they are getting joy in the work that they do.
Vice President Wade at MCC, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you that athletics has been a very important part of MCC for the past 60 years. Our athletes are tested prior to every game, and they have the opportunity to reach national and regional competitions even this spring. And one more thing I want to add is that we follow national guidance by our equivalent of which is the National Junior College Athletic Association, about making sure that we adhere to safety guidelines. But these students are ambassadors for the college, and this experience helps them to grow holistically and is a great positive part of their educational experience, which we would love to support as long as we can continue to do it safely, and we will do so.
Mark writes to say, Evan, bravo to your panel. We're not going back, not right now, not unless a new variant sets us back to zero on this. I appreciate hearing that students are coming back. That's from Mark. And as Mark shares that note, let me go ahead and also read a little bit more from, oh boy, I've got so much in front of me. We were talking about, I think, the notion that we're sort of living with this now, that this is part of the future. And this is from the Washington Post, not from the Times. The Washington Post writes, some leaders in higher education view this fall as the first step in adjusting campus life for the foreseeable future. They view COVID as an inevitable part of life going forward, similar to how campuses live with influenza and other communicable diseases. The goal is to find the right balance to allow for individual freedom and community safety. Paula A. Johnson, president of Wellesley College in Massachusetts, said, as time goes on, we are going to need to learn how to live with this virus. And I think we're learning that right now. And Jim Malatris from the Chancellor of SUNY School said in a text message to the Washington Post, there is always anxiety, but we feel like we are now on much firmer ground living with this. That's a different message than COVID zero. That's not the same as saying we are now in an effort to eradicate COVID. That is saying that we accept that COVID is unfortunately going to be with us in some form. Let's be smart. Let's strike the right balance, and let's be prepared to continue to do that if we must. And I wonder how all three of our guests, President Paul at Nazareth, what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I think it's vitally important that we continue in our society with all experiences. But I must say, it is vitally important that we continue with the education of people in our society. We cannot put that on hold. This is our collective future, and we've got to move forward. So I agree that we have learned a whole lot over the last year and a half. I know my colleagues and I would probably agree. We feel like we've all gotten advanced degrees in public health. You know, we've learned a lot about health, about mental health, and about how to help a community practice, you know, healthy behaviors. So we've learned a lot that we will carry with us as we move forward. And I think that's one of the things I've really observed in our students just this past week is they've learned. And they've learned some really important practices that are now part of our lives that we will take forward. And it will be helpful in managing COVID. It will also be helpful in managing the flu and in other, you know, health dynamics that we have.
But President Paul, when you say, you know, education must be a priority, we have to educate students, it's part of our society. I think those who probably support the more stringent response, even at this point in the pandemic, would say, true, but you can continue to do that remotely if you must. I can't imagine anyone wants to, but how do you evaluate how effective remote learning is?
It's such a powerful question, and I think it's one of the things we've learned a lot about in this last year and a half. There are some individuals who can learn very effectively remotely. There are many individuals who cannot. And we have heard that repeatedly from our students. It's not just the efficacy of learning, that's part of it. It is also human connection. It is also mental health. It is well-being in a more well-rounded way that we have heard over and over and over again. Our students want to be in community. And it is a powerful part of their learning and development that they will take into our collective future. We need it. When you look at our society today, we need it.
Okay. President McPherson, when it comes to living with COVID, I mean, do you agree that we're not headed to a world with zero COVID?
I do agree with that. Our vaccine mandate is likely to be in place in perpetuity, right? We have to, in the same way we have the MMR vaccine requirements, in the same way we do other things for our campus health and well-being. I do believe that this is something we will live with for a very, very long time, maybe forever, and we will learn how to adapt and cope. We have learned some great lessons, right? Wash your hands more frequently. It keeps you safer. If you feel sick, stay at home. I think all of those things will do well if you have a cold, if you have the flu, if you have COVID. These are things that will help our community over and over again. And it is important that we have multiple ways in which we have opportunities for students to engage with learning. My view about remote learning or online learning is there's really good online learning and there can be really poor online learning. It is not one or the other. It depends upon the ability of the faculty member to be the best faculty member possible in that kind of modality. It depends on the student's ability to connect with online learning, and many of our students want those opportunities for, say, graduate school or other opportunities there. So I would never say one is good and one is bad, but we want to have an opportunity to have the whole basket of opportunities for our students. So those who want to be face-to-face, and we want them here on campus, to have that experience as, say, an 18-year-old coming and leaving home for the first time, will have that experience. But that working mother or that working father can also have the opportunity to have online learning and learn in that way, a way that fits in with the rest of their complex lives. It is the entire gamut that we need to be able to achieve on this campus and every campus.
Yeah, and President McPherson, I'm curious to know if you think there is at least a kind of natural ceiling to what online learning can do. And we've been exploring throughout this summer in a series of conversations with K-12 teachers what teachers feel like they have learned in the last 18 months. And I mean, the responses have been fascinating because it is everything from the value or not of standardized tests to how students learn, to checking up on students who have more acute needs, to what relationship building is all about. And next hour is the final conversation for K-12 is back, and it's with music teachers. And music teachers have really, I mean, it is really, really hard to do this in a remote sense, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. Is there a natural ceiling on remote learning, or do you think it sort of varies subject to subject?
I think there's a real difference between teaching a five-year-old and teaching an adult. I think that five-year-old children, any K-12 child, has different needs at various points. So, you know, if you're thinking about emotional support and well-being, learning how to be part of a community, smaller children need to learn a lot at school. It isn't just about math, writing, music, et cetera. They're learning a lot of other things. And that's also true for adult learners, but adult learners are in a very different space. So I do think that there will always be a place for face-to-face teaching. I think that's a really important part of what that college experience is. But if we can do the best to help students who have other ways of accessing information and make sure that we are meeting their needs as well, then we are expanding education, and that can only be a good thing.
Andrea Wade, is COVID unfortunately here to stay in some sense?
Oh, I think so. And again, we're going to need to learn to live with it as we have with other infectious diseases throughout history. To respond to your question about a ceiling on remote or online learning, I would say it slightly differently and say there are some subjects or fields that are easier than others and some that are more challenging than others to deliver remotely or online. But with the right tools, with the right technology, and with keeping that relationship between the teacher and the learner central, I think that we've realized that much more is possible to do with quality than we knew about in the past. If I can quote MCC's president, Deanna Burtnana, what she says is MCC is inspiring the way forward. And so for us, we're seeing our employers in our community turning to MCC again to look how we can help support the region recover from the pandemic and to learn to live with COVID-19 for the future.
In our remaining minutes here, I want to address a couple questions listeners had just about, you know, what it would take to shut down again. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to shut down really at all again. I'm just reading from WXXI News today that in the Rochester City School District, Superintendent Leslie Meyer-Small says the district is committed to in-person instruction, but central office is working through issues with transportation providers about a nationwide bus driver shortage. There are staff issues. It's a challenge in a lot of places, in a lot of different sort of industries or for different organizations. So that would be one challenge. I don't know if that you know, that kind of staffing issue, if there's anything on the horizon that would impact higher ed. But then beyond that, I think listeners are wondering, is there a threshold that would make you say we can't do this anymore? The first thing that comes to my mind, President Paul, is the idea that if there is a variant, God forbid, that avoids vaccination, we all may be back at the drawing board for a little while. And the hope is that science is very, very quick at reworking vaccines to deal with any new variants, even though I will continue to stress, as much as that's the dark cloud scenario, in conversations with researchers, in vaccination scientists, that is possible. It's not all that likely. It is likely as this thing continues to mutate, you either get more transmissible or more virulent, rarely both. Rarely both. It just doesn't usually happen that way for a variety of reasons, even though it's not impossible. So, you know, like, let's continue to cross our fingers. But to address the question of what would shut you down, is there anything that you think could really stop you from being on campus for the entirety of this school year?
We learned a lot last year, and we have protocols in place. You know, as my colleagues have talked about, you know, we all have our emergency response groups that have been working feverishly to define all of these protocols and ifs, you know, the if scenarios. And we learned that last year, and we put things in place to be able to allow us to continue with the very important education that we offer. So we would continue, you know, we would first go back to some of those intermediate steps, mm-hmm. like, for example, creating more distance between people indoors and, you know, the kind of protocols that mitigate within a campus setting. And I love what President McPherson is saying about the bigger basket of different ways of engaging people in learning. That's what's happened over this last year and a half. It's wonderful. We have many more tools in our toolbox to engage students, and we'll use the same kind of ingenuity we used last year to innovate, to you know, adapt and keep people engaged. But we are very, very committed in every way possible to keep the powerful in-person learning experience going, because we know the difference it makes for our students, both in terms of their learning as well as in terms of their mental health. And we know the difference it makes in our community with all of our students all throughout the community doing, you know, all sorts of, you know, experiences with nonprofits, medical facilities, et cetera, schools. We know that it makes a difference there too.
As I turn to her colleagues on that point, I just want to be responsible and keep saying the vaccine still works. I mean, it's still a remarkable thing. That's the reason these vaccine mandates are in place. The state of Florida reported 1,300 deaths to COVID yesterday. Now, that wasn't all in one day, but that is a staggering number, the vast majority of which are people who were not vaccinated. And Florida is now averaging 300 and 325 deaths a day to COVID. I mean, that's an unbelievable number. New York State is averaging 30. I mean, it's more than 10 times in Florida, and our vaccination rate is higher, significantly higher. But, you know, I'm just looking at the differences, and vaccines are still preventing the worst outcomes, which is a tremendous success. President McPherson, is there anything that would sort of lead you to think we have to shut down or really gear back here?
You know, we have a number of risk levels that we look at and some metrics we put against that. Obviously, our vaccination rate is a really significant thing for us. But things that are happening in the region, if there are hospital and healthcare capacity issues in the region, that we would keep an eye on that. If any of the regional trends indicate very high levels of risk, if we're seeing spikes in unknown transmission sources, that would be a level of concern for us that we would need to look at. If our campus positivity rate continued to climb, as maybe over 5% or higher, that would be something. If our quarantine and isolation space is full and we have no place to put people, that would be a concern for us. If our supplies were depleted or back ordered, that things that keep us safe, masks and cleaning equipment, etc., those are the things that we would be looking at if we had to think about going remote for a temporary or extended period of time. Mm-hmm. But before we did that, we would consider other ways of reducing our density of faculty and staff. We would look at spacing in classrooms. We would again make sure, obviously, at that point, that full masking mandate would be not just indoors. We'd probably have it outdoors as well. Everything that we would do, we would consult with state and local departments of health and SUNY. But we are really expecting that all the things we've already put in place and that high level of vaccination rate will keep us safe and keep us here.
In 30 seconds, Andrea Wade, what about you?
I think I can agree with everything that's been said and offer thanks to Monroe County Department of Health for their consistent guidance and for being such an invaluable partner to us in helping keep our institutions and our communities safe.
I want to thank our guests. The leaders in higher ed have essentially said yes every time we've asked them to come on for the last year and a half, and they have navigated challenges that, despite all of their education and training, a lot of folks never thought they would have to deal with, and I am grateful for that. Andrea Wade from MCC, thank you for making time, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
From SUNY Brockport, Heidi McPherson. President McPherson, thanks for making time for the program. Good luck on campus.
Thank you so much.
And Beth Paul, president of Nazareth College, have a wonderful year on campus. Thank you.
Thank you. Honored to be with you and my esteemed colleagues.
Well, it's nice to have people with us in the studio. Hope everyone is healthy and happy, and we've got more connections coming up in just a couple minutes.